This week, our guest is going to talk about flow. How is flow important to performing well under pressure? How can you enter that flow state in key match moments? And how does living and competing in flow impact both your performance and, of course, your overall well-being?
This is the Thrive Podcast, the podcast that gives you the opportunity to, well, thrive.
Welcome to another edition of the Thrive Podcast. With us today is another fantastic guest, performance director of the Flow Center. He actually, before that, he was a professional, almost a professional tennis player, one of the top juniors in the sport that myself and Alan love, tennis. And now he's the performance director of the Flow Center, an organization dedicated to flow research, education, and coaching, with a background in neuroscience and psychology. With great pleasure, let me welcome Cameron Norsworthy. Welcome, Cameron.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We may as well go straight in, because we hear a lot about the notion of flow or flow state. Can you explain exactly what this term is and what it means?
I'm glad you asked me that, because it's often an elusive state that, you know, a lot of us hold as athletes as the holy grail of sort of performance. But the more we think about it, the more it kind of disappears out of some kind of tangible reach. And, you know, I've spent a lot of the last 10 years, getting my head around it, but B, also from a scientific perspective, trying to make it simpler to understand, you know, and we sort of boiled it down to this intrinsically rewarding experience in which we're absorbed in the moment and our actions feel more effortless than usual. So there's this sort of state of absorption, you know, where we get into the act and we're so focused and absorbed in the moment that the world around us melts around. You know, if we're using tennis analogies, the racket feels part of our hand. We're just, nothing else matters. And there's also this sort of sense of ease. It just feels a little bit more fluid, more easier, more effortless than usual. So it's not this consciously contrived state of performance. There's this fluidity and it feels fantastic and magical. And we come out feeling almost surprised by what our body's just achieved in those moments where we're kind of deep into flow.
On your TED talk, you describe what flow is, and you speak about your experience as a tennis player. And I remember this scene that you paint where you're playing a tiebreak and you're up, I think it was 6-love, and you were playing in the state of flow. And then what happened at 6-0? Can you go through that with us?
I started thinking about it. I got in my own way. You know, when you were often being this place of complete trust where everything's just happening and it's all, you know, working in synchronicity. And it's beautiful. And then often we'll get slightly distracted. Can you hear me all right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
What, so we get distracted when we're up 6-0 on a tiebreak, like we're in flow, but then we start to overthink and we get distracted.
I started thinking, and you know, often we'll get into this bubble, into this state of harmony and trust, and it feels great. And then for myself and for a lot of people, there's often this thought about the outcome. You know, suddenly I was 6-love up and I was like, I might actually win this. And then it was like, oh, but what happens if I don't win it? What will other people think of me? What will the people on the sideline think of me? What will the coach think of me? What will I think of myself? And you know, I started to sort of load on this expectation and then the mild anxiety that was previously quite exciting and helping me sort of stay present and reach a high level of performance was suddenly becoming more of an inhibitor. And And then, you know, suddenly I sort of threw the ball up a little bit to the left and my serve wasn't as fluid as before. And it was just a bit tighter. And so the other person got an easier return. And I started to completely get lost in my thoughts. And I was so conscious in the experience of thinking about what if, you know, I mustn't mess up. You know, I'd gone from zero fear and just playing the shot that I could see to trying not to mess up because I was six love up. And at that level, you know, that's a monumental shift, and it leaves a big door open for the opposition to come in and soak up some points. And that's what happened. And it just kind of escalated and escalated, and I got tighter and tighter. And, you know, and it came back to six all before I threw a towel over my head and reset myself and managed to kind of get myself back into the game. But there's this, you know, there's that place of being, you hear it all the time, no mind, right? Of kind of, you know, I often talk about thinking less and being more, and being able to, being able to play with that intuitive action because we're not inhibited with our thoughts. And in that moment, I was completely attached to all my thoughts. And at the time, they were very, very negative. And, you know, we know now from a scientific point of view, when we're locked in our thoughts, we're locked in our thinking brain, which is our prefrontal cortex at the front of our head. And, you know, often when we're stressed or thinking too much, we'll sort of stroke our forehead. And, you know, we all do it, and we sort of stroke it as if we're a bit stressed. And that's because we're, you know, there's so much energy and activity and blood flow in that frontal region of our cortex. And we know that when we're operating through that cognition, as if that thinking brain is leading our cognition, in scientific terms, it's that explicit system or cold system, then we know our reaction times are slower, our decision making is slower, our ability to function is suboptimal. And I was certainly, you know, hooked on the outcome and activating that thinking brain, and it became a major inhibitor.
So Cam, on that, if you have a client, a tennis player, and this is obviously an experience that many athletes have, and they come to you and they say, listen, like every time I'm up 6-love in a tiebreak or 6-4 in a tiebreak, or even every time I play a tiebreak, I start becoming really nervous. I start focusing on the outcome. I start overthinking. What can I do?
Great question. And there's a number of parts to this. And often when we start working together, we've got to start from the ground up. You know, we've sort of philosophically got to buy into the fact that focusing on the outcome doesn't work. You know, whether we're playing football, whether we're playing golf, whether we're skiing, whatever it is, we've often got these goals, these targets, the kind of the need to achieve a certain benchmark. And when that becomes in our focus, we add expectation, and then often we start comparing ourselves to other people, ourselves previously or in the future. And these comparisons add sort of a low level of pressure. And then that allows the thinking brain to kick in, and we start to project, and anxiety starts to build and stress starts to form. And we you know, all the time tighten our neurology, we tighten our mind, we tighten our body, we become a bit more rigid, less agile, less adaptable, and less able to be in that flowy, fluid, trusting space. And so when we can buy into that philosophy that focusing on the outcome doesn't help our moment-to-moment performance, it might help us get us off the sofa and have some kind of like short-term compliance to get up from a, you know, a sort of a low motivation space, but it doesn't help us perform in an optimal manner. And once we can really see that, you know, and often I think this is athletes recognize this when they, you know, when we can win, being outcome driven for sure. And we can play at a high level and being outcome driven for sure. But often the experience is dissatisfying. You know, we get to the sort of, we finish and we're like, oh, thank God that's over. There's more of like a relief that, oh, I made it. Phew. And the whole process and experience of getting there, you know, hasn't been an optimal one. You know, and I see this a lot in the sporting world, because there's a lot of coaches there who have sort of been brought up with 1960s sports psychology and you know, keep shouting the same messages of, you know, you win at all costs, you know, no pain, no gain, and all the time thinking that they're helping people focus, but all they're doing is distracting the athletes achieving their best performance. And so it's very difficult, you know, for an athlete to, or not for every athlete, but for a lot of athletes to really accept that, you know, and often I have to sort of point out that, you know, if we're focused on winning at all costs, then our standard can vary hugely. We can win and play terrible. You know, we can achieve a certain outcome, but be far from our best. So on the flip side of that, if we can buy into this idea that this focus on being in flow, on having a mastery orientated approach, where we want to be in that pressure cooker because we know it's an opportunity to develop, to learn, to develop and grow our talents, and we can start to see pressure as this beautiful crystallizing thing that allows our abilities to sharpen and become acute. You know, that only comes from this fundamental base of really wanting to develop and wanting to be in flow more than anything else. And so when we can sort of buy into that underlying mindset, if you like, or orientation to achievement or approach, where, just to simplify, you know, I'm here to get into my flow, as opposed to I'm here to look good to other people and impress someone and win and look better in the eyes of others, all that kind of more ego orientated stuff. If we can focus on that more flow orientated space, then we've got the foundations and the framework. You know, our psychological framework is not going to fall apart as soon as it gets difficult. To the contrary, we're going to become more solid and stronger as things get more difficult. So I think that's an important part of the step. And often we might need to reset, you know, actually shake up our physiology and our mentality to kind of get out of the unhelpful habit we're in, and then put on this sort of new cap, if you like, this new mindset. And once we've got that in place, I think, you know, then it's about that self-regulation in the moment. You know, can we allow ourselves to be present? You know, can we increase our arousal to a really cool place where we're excited by this challenge, but not too over-aroused that we start getting really nervous and shaky? Can we be really motivated and pumped? You know, we've got high purpose and we want to be here. You know, can we manage our sort of moment-to-moment intensity and arousal and presence where we're not thinking about the film that we watched last night? We're not kind of going through the motions or doing enough. We're completely there. And often, you know, that alone allows us to get into flow and to not get caught up in the mental games of what happens if I do this and all that anxiety and so forth. And then, you know, then we can kind of move on to more deeper state of performance, of where we can go to another place of trust and a place of effortlessness and a place of, you know, really envisaging ourselves in flow and then letting it happen rather than making it happen. But I think, you know, that freedom we can get from just diffusing from all the mind games that normally cloud our brain, either before an important game or match or in it, is liberating and really worth putting time and effort into it. You know, us athletes were so happy to spend hours on the training pitch, physically training, looking at nutritional programs, changing equipment, and spending a lot of money on all of and time on all of this. But we're rarely willing to spend, you know, even 10 minutes training our minds, training our emotions, and getting into a habit of professionalizing that mental game, you know, is key. And I think people who reach the cream or the top of their sport, they realize that, you know, it becomes everything at that elite level. And but people that are who are aspiring to that, if they can get into a habit of becoming flow fit, of creating rituals that include mental preparations before they go and train, before they go compete, that, you know, that's where the work is done.
So in what you're saying is then, Cam, is that you can access a flow state at will. I mean, I know from my own, for example, NLP training, for example, they use techniques such as anchoring to induce a resourceful state. So how do you achieve a flow state? And is it something you can bring into your personal life? Because, again, once an athlete walks off the pitch, walks out of the boxing ring, walks off the field, the tennis court, they go into their private life. And I guess flow is something that we all want to achieve in our everyday lives. Can you access this at will? And if so, how?
I think achieving any subjective state at will, you know, is a huge statement that I'm not sure I would believe anyone if they said that that was possible. You know, we can certainly prime ourselves to be in the best possible place to find it. You know, flow is a subjective state, like being happy or being depressed, right? And we can't necessarily just suddenly be happy at will. We can put things in place. We can think about being grateful. We can, you know, anchor that old happy experience and bring it to the forefront of our mind. And then we build that those neurological sensations and we prime our neurochemistry to kind of to be more happy. But, you know, subjective experience is a complex scenario. But, you know, certainly we can put the steps in to get us there most of the time. And that's where, you know, the training comes in. And I think for a lot of people don't know what flow is. You know, we might hear it from commentators or we might hear it around the place, but not many people really stop to examine it and kind of, you know, often we will perform well and put it down to luck, or our ego will get involved and we'll be like, oh, I'm just amazing. Or we'll put it down to that physiological effort of training and the thousands of hours that we've put in. But often we don't sort of stop and think about, you know, those moments when things just click and everything comes together. What actually happens there? You know, and a lot of my training when I work one-on-one with people is to find flow outside of their main sport, you know, which is often a bit strange for them because they come to me to improve their performance in the particular sport that they came to me for. But if we can start to find that internal harmony, that internal trust, that absorption into the act, in things like throwing tea bags into a teacup, in darts, in I've got to clean my house and I've got 30 minutes to do it. Can I find a milder state of flow doing that? If we can gain a level of mastery in the everyday flow, then it makes finding flow in those important moments, matches, games so much easier. So for me, linking, you know, that mental mastery and that training outside the activity that we're focused on or the sport that we're focused on is really important and integral.
On that, Cameron, do you see a connection between players who access flow more regularly, and well-being vis-a-vis players who struggle with well-being and being caught up in their heads a lot of the time?
Great question. And I think, you know, nowadays the research is really clear around the more holistically well-being one becomes, the higher, the more sustained high performance can be. And I think anyone can find flow randomly. Anyone can get into a state of high performance randomly. But can we sustain it? You know, that is a very, very different question. And I often like to look at flow as this state of internal harmony, where everything just comes together. And what that means, if we kind of look under the hood, is that that cannot happen if there's A, distraction, or B, conflict. If we're distracted by something around us, or distracted by something within us, or if there's conflict within us, then we can't be fully focused on the task at hand. We can't be in internal harmony. So the more internal conflict we have, and the more the less our emotional intelligence and the less our mental mastery, the more conflict's going to come up, and the less likelihood of us sustaining that flow or that high level of performance. So I see well-being and high performance intricately linked, in the sense that if we can fulfill our needs, if we can learn how to work with our emotions, if we can learn how to have a state of mastery over our thoughts and our mind, then we have that intimacy, that self-relationship, where we can ask our brain and our body to get into flow. We can ask ourselves to sustain a high level of performance another time. We can ask ourselves to push on for another 30 minutes when everything else is telling us to stop and we're too tired. We can have that coherence, internal coherence, and that deep bond with our mind and body. And if we don't have that, then yes, we might be able to find flow momentarily, or we, you know, you see this in a lot of athletes where they're able to kind of reach and do amazing things, but they just can't sustain it. You know, they just can't keep a consistent level all the time. And often that's because there's a lot of internal chaos going on. There's a lot of emotional dysfunction or pain, or their needs aren't well met, or and there's a lot of internal distraction and conflict. So I see them, hopefully what I'm saying is understandable, but I see that is well-being and sustained high performance is intricately linked.
And can I ask you, Cameron, I know it's difficult, but what practices do you advise athletes to spend time on in order to be able to get into that flow moment more regularly, at least?
There's the sort of basic psychological skills, which are always worthwhile. You know, they're always worthwhile building our skill set on. You know, like if we're a tennis player, we're going to spend time serving, improving our volleys. If we're a footballer, we're going to spend time working on our free kicks, our one-on-ones around people. If we're a skier, we're going to work on our turns and so forth. So when we take that approach away from the technical and physical and onto the mental and emotional, it's always worth taking those core skills, such as thought diffusion, being able to I think more recently it's sort of more wrapped up in the notion of mindfulness or mindlessness, where we're not so attached to our thoughts. We allow thoughts to come and go, and we, You know, we see our brain as this thing that is engineered to create thoughts, and we don't jump on every thought that comes up. You know, we can allow our thoughts, our brains, to have interesting, crazy thoughts, but we don't pay attention to it or attach our identity or hook onto it and think that we've got to keep thinking along that line, right? We allow that thought just to disappear. And so that, you know, that sort of non-judgmental diffusion, if you like, for a technical term, or just detaching from our thoughts more simplistically, is really important. And a lot of people, you know, they get into that kind of mindfulness and they think, oh, I've got to get rid of all my thoughts, and which is impossible. And so it's like, oh, this is too hard. I can't be asked to do this. And so we need then like an app or something to like guide us through it. And then that becomes difficult to like, you know, we get excited, we do it for a week, but then we drop it because it's just, you know, too difficult. But actually we can practice for 5 seconds. We can practice for, you know, 1 minute every hour. We can practice in for 1 second. I'm going to do it right now as I'm talking to you. Just done it. You know, so we can practice that mental skill of thought diffusion all the time. And that's a fundamental skill. Visualization is a fundamental skill in terms of being able to use our brain's ability to project the future, create a vision that we want, to then create signposts and clear blueprints for the mind and body to then follow. Our brain's already doing that naturally. It's called Bayesian processing. It's already involved in that. So if we can learn to take charge of that, use it to our advantage, capitalize on the visualization that we're already doing, but we may not be aware of, then that can be really, really powerful. I think emotional intelligence is a key skill of learning to actually be comfortable with our emotions. You know, research nowadays, modern research, seems to be painting a clear picture of if we actually allow our emotions to exist, we actually allow ourselves to get angry and then let it go rather than push it down or bottle it up or pretend it doesn't exist, then we're allowed to come back to high performance as quickly as possible. So building a relationship with our emotions, our ability to identify them, understand them, and regulate or let go of them, you know, that's a skill that we need to train. It's a muscle that needs to be trained for it to work. You know, and there's a few other core like sports psychological skills that I could talk about this for about 2 hours, but there's those key sports psychological skills really, really important. In terms of finding flow, I think there is, you know, I talk a lot nowadays about experiential intelligence, about this idea of being able to identify what our experience is right now in this moment, and how far is this experience away from flow, right? And I've got a graphical representation I can perhaps send you or attach to this pod in the show notes or whatever that hopefully might help people. But there's this sort of like, where is my experience now and how far am I away from flow? So that I find is really helpful, because often we might recognize an emotion or we might recognize a thought, and sometimes we might recognize an experience, like I'm stressed, for example, but we don't necessarily then kind of go, well, where do I want to be and what do I need to get there? So I think sort of recognizing our experience in relation to flow is really, really helpful. And then as I sort of explained earlier, there's that fundamental wiring, if you like, that needs to be heading towards flow. You know, like anything in life, if we put it in our subconscious, we create an intention around it, we more often than not end up creating it, whether we're aware of it or not. And so flow's got to kind of be important. Flow's got to be up there as something we want to be in and enjoy and prioritize over other things. And if that can happen, you know, then we're halfway there. Our kind of a brain and our body, everything starts to want to create that anyway. And flow feels fantastic. It's like, you know, it's rewarding. We're at our best. It just feels great. So, you know, there's so much dopamine and like amazing stuff that happens there that the brain wants to create it. You know, so we've really got to like help ourselves out. And the first step is sort of really prioritizing that, and which might seem easy and basic, sitting chatting, but trying to do that when we're, you know, five all juice or one all with 2 minutes to go on the clock, you know, or, you know, right at the pressure point of a particular match or a particular competition, trying to do it then, that's difficult. And so often what I'm doing is training people under states of pressure, you know, in another environment. I might take them free diving or rock climbing or find creative ways to put them under pressure and see if they can reorientate what's important to them in those moments and whether flow can be a central kind of direction for that. So, you know, that's sort of, I guess that there's other more sort of not advanced skills, but more sort of intricate skills, you know, around that high level of trust and that high state of absorption. But it's kind of, it will all come crumbling down if we don't have flow as a priority, because otherwise the brain and the body will naturally default to other higher agendas that we might have.
Can I just ask you, Ken, of the athletes you've worked with, you're teaching methods to obviously high performers, athletes, to reach this state of flow and harmony. Can you give me an example of how it's affected their professional performance and their overall mental well-being?
Yeah. So many examples. What to
sorry, I'm to looking put you on the spot.
No, that's fine. I'm looking in the area we're recording in. There's a picture behind me of a skier there, which is, you know, comes to my mind in the sense that this skier was top 14 in the world for like nearly a decade. And in all intents and purposes, performing at a super high level, right? And but there was this sort of switch that we made when we started working together, which was prioritizing flow. Super simple pivot, right? But the knock-on effect was monumental in the sense that suddenly there was a focus other than this consciously strained need to become world champion. And so suddenly they started to enjoy traveling more. They started to enjoy traveling to the competitions more. She suddenly started to invite the pressure of the competition a little bit more, because she knew that the pressure was the crystallization that she needed to find flow. She started to be less stressed. And so her relationships around her started to be a bit more rewarding. She started to get on better with the other people in the tour and the other competitors. And she stopped seeing them as like enemies and started to kind of see this as this collective, amazing tour that we're all part of. And she started to actually enjoy the ski runs rather than having this deep pressure of I must perform, I must do well. I've got to hit a certain target. And as a result, you know, again, sitting here, it kind of probably sounds a bit more obvious. Her whole body was allowed to relax and she was able to trust herself more and enjoy the process more. And the next year she became world champion. And the year after that, she was second. But not only was her performance higher, but she was, her whole experience of competing was so much more rewarding. So, you know, her personal life became more enjoyable. Her competitive professional career became more enjoyable and more rewarding. And she, you know, her performance obviously went up, which which at the beginning was the primary aim, but it ended up not, you know, although she was extremely grateful for that performance improvement, she was probably more happier that everything else in her life started to sort of come together and started to change. So when we start to sort of journey beyond results, we start to build a sort of a brighter and more connected picture, which ironically has a knock-on effect to our performance and outcomes.
That's really amazing. And if I'm hearing you right, there is kind of something paradoxical, right? Because athletes grow up and think their main goal is to win and to achieve goals and to think of goals and to pursue goals and to be ambitious. And at the same time, if I'm hearing you correctly, they need to let go of those outcomes at some stage and just really focus on the experience of being in the moment, loving what they do, and connecting to the state of flow and trusting that things will come together eventually.
Yeah, that there's very much this paradoxical scenario of when we let go of the outcomes take care of themselves. And, you know, I'm not here saying we shouldn't ever think about outcomes. Like, I think it's really important to build a vision, you know, have a vision of, I have this vision of me standing on top of the podium, feeling fantastic and lifting the trophy, or I have a vision of me being one of the greatest tennis players in the world, or I have a vision of me winning Wimbledon, or I have a vision of me winning the World Championship, or, you know, World Cup, or whatever sport you're doing. I think those visions are important, and the visions around it speak to our neurology, our emotions, our subconscious, and everything, and our, you know, the day-to-day motivation that picks us up off the sofa and gets us training at an intense level day after day after day. So having those visions are really, really important. But then breaking, you know, first of all, having a vision rather than a specific outcome is very important, because that outcome is often very much fixed to, it's very linear, it's very predetermined from a long time ago that may not be relevant anymore. And it's in the language of our prefrontal cortex and our thinking brain. So generally, when we have a specific outcome, we start to think about it with our thinking, analytical, inner critic, self-reflective, explicit system. And although that can be helpful sometimes when we want feedback, when we want to calibrate, when we want to plan and strategize, it doesn't help us when we then go train, when we then go perform, when we then go try and live our lives and live rewarding, high motivating, high performing lives. So it can help in terms of creating structure for feedback, but we've got to, as you said, we've got to let go of it. And often it's easier to let go of it if we've linked it up with feedback, KPIs, performance orientated visions or goals, and then broken that down into more process orientated points of focus or goals. So, you know, then if we've done all that kind of pre-calibration, we can then kind of go, ah, I know if I just focus on these processes, then the rest of it will kind of take care of itself. So I think, you know, having that structure in place of organizing what's my vision, what are the kind of performance metrics that if I hit, I know I'm on the right path. And then what are the processes that I need to focus on day in and day out that are going to get me there? I think having that in place is super important. But when we go and actually perform the act of being an athlete and going out there and putting our body on the line and reaching that state of optimal place, then we've got to get out of that prefrontal cortex and we've got to go into a state of trust and a state of moment-to-moment presence.
Where can people learn more about your work?
They can go to theflowcoach.live or the center. You know, we have a center, flowcenter.org, where we train people to become performance coaches, and individual athletes can come and do training programs. Those are probably the best two places.
And one last question. I've asked it of other guests. It's an interesting one, I think, insofar as you often see trainers coming onto the pitch in a football field if someone's picked up an injury. What about on the mental field? If you were called on as the coach or the physio to come on and help a sports person in whatever sport, you picked up a mental injury at that particular point, what would you do?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And I think that's starting to happen. You know, you see these water boys, you know, who are generally sports psychologists now, who run on the pitch and hand out water. It is quite individualistic, you know, depending on, because some people might be thinking too much, you know, and anxious. And we need to say, get out of your head, trust yourself, more confidence-based sort of messaging. Another person might not be aroused enough. The event might not be important enough to them because they're used to playing much bigger events, and they actually need to sort of increase the importance and their arousal in that moment. So it is, there's no sort of one answer to that. There's no golden bullet, unfortunately. I think it does depend on the individual, you know, but I do laugh a lot at when I'm watching TV and I see all these coaches putting out all this like strategic sort of thinking directions, and the players are sort of distracted by it, you know, and it takes them way away from where they need to be to perform well. And a lot of that kind of strategic calibration kind of really needs to be done on the training pitch. And coaches often think that they're doing the right thing, or they think that they're being helpful because they feel like they need to affect what's happening, what they're seeing. But actually what they need to do is help those individuals find their flow. And often those responses are two very different responses.
Cam, thanks so much. It was really very interesting to learn from you. And I'm sure we're going to be talking again in the future.
Do head over to the Thrive website. That's www.thrive, spelt THR, the digit one, VE.space, where you can sign up for further giveaways and, of course, tips. That's www.thrive, spelt THR1VE.space. After all, this is your space to thrive.